Representative Brainerd, would you move the minutes of the last meeting, please? Thank you very much. Representative Brainerd moves the minutes of the last meeting. Be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. First bill up today will be Senate File 525 or House File 677. Representative Bunn, please. In your packet, you have a copy of both the Senate file and the House file, and I believe we have to use the Senate file. Is that correct?
Yes.
We'll be using the Senate file, and so then she has an amendment to move the House language in. Okay. Do you want to move your bill first of all, and then we'll look at your amendment to move the House language into the Senate file?
Correct. I move that Senate file, I believe 525, is that correct?
Yes.
Passed and moved to the General Register.
Thank you very much. Why don't we do the amendment right away then?
Mm-hmm. I additionally move that House File 677 be third engrossment be substituted in the Senate file.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Why don't you give us a description of your bill and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that has had a long circuitous history to it. There are two main issues involved here. This is has to do with the statewide regulation of the tattoo and body art establishments and technicians throughout our state, defined quite broadly. The motivation for the bill comes from two sectors. One is our blood banks in the state are interested in this legislation because their national standards require that in order to take blood donations from anyone who's had a tattoo or piercing in the last 12 months, there has to have been statewide regulation of those technicians that perform that, that satisfy certain health and safety requirements associated with bloodborne disease and pathogens. So other states have moved to also adopt this type of regulation to meet that national requirement. We have an issue going forward in our state and nationally in that with the aging of our population, there are fewer and fewer people who meet the requirements to give blood. At the same time, as you know, recently in the legislature, we lowered the age requirement to 16 rather than 18 to give blood. And yet a lot of young people and even older people today have mainstreamed tattooing and piercing, and a lot of people have these things done. So we want to make sure that we can maintain an adequate blood supply. Secondarily, the industry itself, those artists that work in this area that have been engaged with this issue over a number of years are interested in regulation for its own sake to ensure that the highest health and safety standards are ensured in this industry. Our goal with this initiative is to build on and improve the efforts in the past in this area that have not yet been successful, and that my personal objective was to have the least intrusive legislation, the least amount of state regulation, but still ensure the adequate health and safety for citizens in our state and to meet the requirements for blood donation are safe. We did not want to be overly onerous of these small businesses and their artistic traditions. So that was the goal in terms of how we structured this, looked at whether the states have done, looked at the past regulation attempts in this state. Most importantly, over this interim, we had two studies done, one by the health department under our direction to look more closely at the industry and the activities in our state, and one done by the Board of Health as well, both of who provide a wealth of information, giving further direction in terms of unanswered questions and a guidance for further work in this area. So what we have before you today, and let me just say as a caveat in terms of the substitution of the House file, there are only very minor single word differences between the two file at this point. Ours was slightly more up to date in terms of the adoption of the changes that they've gone along, and that's why we substituted. But we're both on the same page in the House and Senate in terms of how we're moving this bill along. The key features of this legislation are that, first of all, we are licensing individual technicians, so they themselves must show proof of having taken appropriate training in blood handling and bloodborne pathogens and disease issues and in infection and sterilization. There are a number of places where this can be done, and more will emerge as we go along. Secondly, we are licensing the establishments where this occurs, if there where multiple individuals are practicing this, and also with attention to both the individuals and the establishment, attending both to the physical environment and its sterile and sanitary conditions, and also to the procedures that they are sterile and sanitary in accordance with the goals of the health and safety objectives of this. In addition, it has professional standards in it related to the kinds of information they need to collect from the potential client that might be important to the process that they are asking to undergo, including some health-related questions. And then the individual practitioner should review this with them and also has the right to refuse if there are conditions under which it is imposes some danger to proceed. In addition to this, there are detailed consent forms required. The other thing that's new with this legislation is that all our surrounding states do not allow tattooing or other very permanent types of body art be done on minors. This is consistent with the widest national standards in terms of most states that regulate this area do not allow minors to be tattooed. So we are bringing ourselves in line with that standard, both that we see in the surrounding states and across the country, but also it's the desire of the artists that are in this business and have longtime practitioners that this be the standard as well. They do not want to do this kind of permanent work on minors. They want them to be autonomous, free-thinking individuals making these decisions. Finally, of course, the bill has language about investigative actions, inspections, civil penalties associated with that. The bill, I should also point out, does not preempt any local jurisdictions from taking more, having more rigorous or higher standards of various kinds if they would like to. Currently in our state, there are some counties and cities that regulate this industry, and we've looked at those. Most of those already meet the standards imposed by the statewide legislation, and if they go beyond these standards, that would preempt the state standards. So they are welcome to be more restrictive if they see fit. Finally, in terms of the fiscal issues, I'm sick, actually, so I may have to have someone, maybe a page could get me some butter, if you can. I should brought a bottle with me. Finally, in terms of the fiscal issues involved, it takes the typical structure of a licensing bill when we're licensing for the first time, and that the agency has estimated how many people they think will be applying for the licenses in the state. They've estimated the kinds of initial inspections that will need to be done, the amount of follow-up inspections that might be done, and based on this, have come up with an initial licensing fee for establishments and for technicians. Over time, well, let me try a cough drop.
While she's gone, let's real quick vote on the amendment to insert the House language into this. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Amendment passes.
And right. Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just speaking for the minority, this is the fiscal committee, and so if we're going to spend this much time explaining all the policy of all the bills in front of us, the minority would be more than happy to try and concentrate primarily on
the fiscal yes. That's where we're getting to.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so please cover
I'm
the fiscal note, if you would, please.
Well, that's the main thing I want to say about the fiscal note was it follows that traditional structure, and that there's a technician fee of $100 renewed every 2 years, an initial establishment fee of $1,000 every 3 years. It requires some additional FTEs. You see in the fiscal note in the first year at 2.1. This is reduced over time because there's this initial startup to do inspections of every establishment we face in the state, and then it's reduced, as you can see, in the out biennium years. So the total effect on the general fund is $190,000 in the first in fiscal 11, $101,000, and then declines to $65,000 and $65,000. This initial startup costs come from the special revenue fund. Again, like and traditionally is done with licensing, once the fees come in, that will be repaid to the special revenue funds. It's intended that this be self-sustaining.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Any questions on the bill? No questions? All right. All those in favor, Representative Bunn renews her motion to pass Senate file 525 and move it to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next bill we have up is House File 2801, Representative Obermueller.
Mr. Chair?
No. Yes.
I would move House File 2801, I think, to pass and be moved to the General Register, I believe.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Representative McNamara. Representative McNamara moves House File 2801 with the recommendation to pass and move to the General Register. Representative Obermueller, thank you for coming, and please present your bill. And this is a fiscal committee, so please cover the fiscal part of your bill as much as possible and stick to that as much as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. This bill, House File 2801, is the complete streets policy that we've been working on in the House, also as a Senate version as well, of course. And the policy for complete streets essentially sets kind of a statewide policy that we're going to take into account more than just thinking about how fast cars can move on our roads, and instead we're going to take into account kind of the other uses of the roads and the other people who interact with them. I won't, again, focus on the policy piece, although I'm happy to answer questions on that regard, but it's really puts the right pieces of infrastructure in the right locations, so they're not wasting money, but we're also putting in the pieces that we need to make sure that the roads and bridges and trails and so forth all interconnect and work well together. Supported by a huge group of people. The fiscal note really deals with the reports that are in there. This bill had initially some a pilot program. That portion has been removed. So I'm not sure if there's an updated fiscal note or not in your packets. That there was $150 for that pilot $150,000 for the pilot program. That's been removed. So all that's left is $41,000 for some reporting requirements, mostly just to make sure that we're actually implementing the policy that that this legislature is going to be setting out for the state. And with that, I'd be happy to take some questions.
Any questions? Do you want to go to the? If not, we do have an amendment. It is the A24 amendment. I assume this is yours, Representative Obermueller?
I'm not sure. May I, is it to the 2801? I haven't seen it in advance, so may I?
No, this is the wrong amendment.
Sorry, this is not an amendment for this bill. This is the next bill. There are no amendments for this bill.
Yeah, the panic.
Scared you there.
Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate that.
Just make sure your heart's pumping. there are no other questions, no amendments? No questions? If not, all those in... Representative McNamara renews his motion to pass House File 2801 with recommendation to pass and send it to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion carries. We're now jumping around a little bit more. We're going to House File 3106. Representative Bingham, is she here? I do not see her.
There's another Obermueller one.
Hi, Tori.
Okay, the next bill we'll do then, since Representative Bingham is not here, is House File 1005, Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is an amendment.
There is an amendment to this. All right. I will move House File 1005 with recommendation to pass to the General Register. And the amendment, do we have that in our packet?
I think it's being distributed right now. It should be the A3 amendment.
Right. Okay, I will move the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Yes. Oh. Wait, can you?
Oh, sorry, not everyone has it yet.
And can you tell us what it does, or...
All right. Do you want to briefly tell us what the A3 amendment does?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A3 amendment makes two housekeeping changes that keep it in line with the Senate version. The first one, line 1.2, is actually a housekeeping change. It's just a clerical error. It should have been 41.25 initially instead of 41.75, so that's there's a flat $15 increase over the regular driver's license fee. And then lines 1.3 and 1.4 delay the implementation for 2 years. That allows the Department of Vehicle Services to bid when the driver's license software and programming comes up for RFP again in 2 years. It allows them to include the EDL language instead of doing two separate things. So it saves the department money by packaging it when they do their next regular round, regular RFP proposal.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment is approved. Okay, now to your bill, Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is a bill for an enhanced driver's license. What the enhanced driver's license would do would be to allow people that, especially along our northern border, that cross the border on a semi-regular basis, daily basis, multiple times a day, it would allow them to voluntarily get an enhanced driver's license, which would include a random number that's verified by a linked database maintained by Department of Vehicle Services. There's no private data on the card. There's no transmitting of private data. It would simply verify that they are a citizen. Why is this advantageous? For a couple reasons. Number one, it's convenient for people that cross the border frequently. With new security provisions, you must have either a passport or a birth certificate, or a passport card. And in order to have a passport card, you must have a passport. The other thing is financial. The enhanced driver's license would be an additional $15 over your regular driver's license fee. Compare that to, with new increases that will go into effect this summer, a passport, which would now be $135 or $160 for an expedited. Passport card, which again you must have the passport first to get the passport card, would be $55 again versus the $15 voluntary fee. So I want to stress again, it's a voluntary provision. It's not for everyone. It's for folks that, especially in the northern part of the state, communities like High Falls, where they're back and forth daily across the border, and it is voluntary. This has been confused in the past with Real ID. It is not Real ID. This data is not maintained, not shared with anyone, and it is not transmitted. So happy to stand for questions. On the fiscal side, which I think is what we're addressing in Ways and Means, you'll note that there is, because of the pushing it out 2 years, there's a new fiscal statement in your new revenue statement in your packet. In the first year, it actually brings in just under $100,000, and you don't see the out years, but that increases in the out years because once the program has been implemented, it's less expensive to maintain. And I did include two handouts for you. One is a handout from the state of Washington, which already has the enhanced driver's license, as does the state of Vermont, the state of New York, and most recently Michigan adopted it last year. And that I also included for you a handout, kind of an overview from the Department of Vehicle Services.
All right. Thank you very much. Pardon me? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert, just to clarify, this is an allowed or recognized license with the federal government, so the agents at the border would take this enhanced driver's license instead of a passport, or in addition to a passport instead of a birth certificate. Can you just clarify that for me, or how simple is it?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, you're correct. You must be able to prove your citizenship status in order to get the enhanced provision, and then it would substitute for the need to carry your passport or birth certificate. It's meant to be less expensive and more convenient.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to follow up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert. So last summer I got a passport. Would I not have needed to do that had this been in place? Because the borders do require passports to come back in. Or would have I needed to get that passport anyways? It's just now I can use that to get this enhanced driver's license.
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, you're correct. You would not have, if you were traveling to only Canada, Mexico, or the Bahamas, the Western Hemisphere Alliance, you would not have needed a passport. If you were going beyond that, and I should clarify, if you were also traveling by plane, this only applies to land travel.
Representative Westrom, you're good? All right, Representative McNamara.
Two questions. My first one would be, how do you land travel to the Bahamas? No. My question...
Ferry.
Yeah. Ferry, okay,
Harper, I got it. No.
Walk on water.
Is it would be, you could by boat, but it doesn't allow by plane? Is that the deal? You could on a cruise ship, Representative Reinert?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, you're correct.
Okay,
plane is the exception. Boat and car, or foot, or bike.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Reinert, my question is it actually going to be less for those of us that have a Class A? It says $5 less for a Class A license. It'll be cheaper if we buy an enhanced one than a regular driver's license, or am I reading that wrong?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, could you direct me to where you're...
Well, I'd have to give you... Here, I'll give you. It's the Republicans. Representative Davids has been helping me find this stuff. Maybe we got a mistake. It says the Class A license is going to be $36.25, $5 less than the current fee. It looks like it's an extra charge of $15 normally.
Correct.
And would it be less on a Class A?
It should not be. My understanding, and Pat McCormick from DVS is testifying on another bill in the Senate, so I'm not sure we had it. She was going to send someone, but... My understanding as we've moved this forward and we introduced it last year was it was just going to be $15 above the normal. So there weren't any other, that is, I've got DVS saying that that is correct, that it's $15 above the normal fee you would pay.
All right.
Okay, thank you. That answers my question.
Very good, thank you. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Reinert. You mentioned that this is being put out about 2 years in the future. Is there any way that we can move it up to a quicker effective date? I mean, I think this would be very beneficial to people on both borders to, is there any way you could move that up?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, before we amended at the start of this hearing, it did go into effect this summer. But I'm trying to work with the department who said this will save significant administrative dollars if they're able to bid it the next time they do the whole package for the driver's license RFP, which would be the 2-year delay.
Okay.
Yes, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Reinhart. We had quite the hearing on this bill last year. I can't remember if it was civil or
transportation.
And your bill, I mean, I like the fact that it's completely voluntary, but the reality is that you still could have an employer making it a requirement or condition of employment. So as this moves to the floor, I'd like to have some discussion about possibly adding some language that would in fact make sure that it is completely voluntary by the individual and prohibiting employers from making it a condition of employment.
Representative Reinert, any?
Chairman, Representative, I'm completely open to that. I want to ensure that it is completely voluntary. There should be no provision that allow that forces someone to get the enhanced version.
All right, thank you.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert, does this also apply to a commercial license?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, yes. This would be available for all license classifications. In fact, the overland haulers are one of the folks that the Trucking Association has endorsed this because their members cross the border frequently moving trade and commerce back and forth between us and Ontario and Saskatchewan.
Any other questions? If not, I renew my motion that House File 1005, as amended, be passed and sent to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Reiner. We will now jump back down to House File 3106, Representative Bingham. All right. Representative Brainerd, would you like to move House File 3106, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House File 3106.
Thank you very much. Okay, do you have any amendments or anything along those lines?
Not that I'm aware of, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Then present your bill, and this is a fiscal committee, so we ask that you stick to the fiscal part as much as possible.
Fine by me, Mr. Chair, and I actually am going to thank Representative Holbrook, because I believe, what is this, the fifth time you've heard this bill? And I think a couple of you have heard it a couple times, too. Members, thank you for allowing me to hear this bill, Representative Solberg. This is the DWI ignition interlock bill. This is the governor's initiative, and I'm bringing it through the process. And the three things that I want to point out regarding cost is the cost for the ignition lock is approximately $100, and that will be borne by the offender. And it's about $100 a month, I'm sorry, and that covers installation and take and removal as long as the duration of the lock, or of the time that you'd have to be on the lock. And there will be a price of about $50 for indigent folks, which that will be determined on the same scale of public assistance, how they use that to decide whether or not they qualify for a discounted price. You'll note on the fiscal note that there is some money there, cost. That is used, there's an FTE on there, and that's used to monitor the participants. That is covered by federal funds, and if it's approximately $1.60 a day for this program, and that's really, as far as the fiscal part, is all I have on the bill.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Bingham. Do we have questions? Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if we could amend the motion and put this on consent calendar.
Fine by me.
No, sorry. Yes, Representative Mallory.
You didn't call me Mallory, did
no.
you?
No. Mahoney.
I was going to leave. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bingham. Now, there's going to be a cost to this of $100 to the offender. So it's kind of, you can volunteer to go on it. Will a judge be able to require the state to pay for anyone that, because someone comes in with a sob story, oh, I got drunk and I got my fifth DWI and if I don't get my driver's license and I don't have this thing, I won't be able to go to work. So the judge goes, fine, state gets to pay for it?
Representative Bingham.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, let me back up a second. First, this applies to those that are, it doesn't apply to first-time offenders unless you have a BCA, a BCL level of, or blood alcohol level, BLA, BAL, of 0.20 or above. So first-time offenders are not on this. After that, really don't have a choice. So it's
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
I understand that.
Okay, well, your comments.
I knew entirely. I've seen the bill twice.
Right. I just wanted to clarify that it isn't an option. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It isn't an option unless it's the first time. But other than that, you get your full driving privileges. And as far as I know, a judge would not be able to say, I'm sorry, we'll cover that for you. As far as I know, and I'm getting the confirmation from the department that a judge would not be able to say, we'll cover that for you.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
Representative
Mahoney.
I think maybe one of these days I'll just have to ask a judge if you're right.
Okay.
Because a judge will always say you're wrong.
Okay. Maybe ask Judge Lippman. Maybe he'll agree with me on something.
Other questions? Yes.
Just real quick, Mr. Chair, Representative Bingham, we do allow an employer could pay for it if they wanted to. In other words, if an employee didn't have the money,
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, no.
So how do we stop that from happening? Who do you pay the money to?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, you pay it the employer can, I'm sorry, I'm phoning a friend. The employer can, I'm sorry, you're right, Representative McNamara, employer can pay for it if they so choose. Sorry.
Thanks for that question.
That was the first time.
Another question? Representative Westrum.
I think I know the answer to this, but I had somebody ask me this. after it passed in civil justice. It's a voluntary program for people if they want to get their driving privileges back. Do we still retain the work permit process if somebody can't afford this or doesn't want to do this and only wants to apply for their work permit and only drive during restricted times?
Representative Bingham.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, only on first-time offenders unless you've blown over 2.20.
Can you repeat that, please?
It's only for the first time, only for first-time offenders unless you have blown over 0.20.
Representative Westrom.
So I understand you can still get the work permit for first-time offenders.
Correct.
Under 0.20 if you choose not to use this interlock system.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, you're correct.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you. And Representative Westrom spiked my interest in another question. Many of our constituents with CDLs, with commercial driver's license, are really hurt financially when they lose their driver's license. Is there any way that this program will allow those people potentially to have the ability to get their driver's license back sooner? Just the financial impact for that for constituents is devastating sometimes, and this seems like a good idea. Do the feds allow us to use this to shorten that time up?
Representative Bingham.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, no.
Representative McNamara.
A quick follow-up. Is that a federal requirement, and is there a waiver process for us to use something like this to shorten up that time period?
Representative Bingham.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, no.
Any other questions? If not, Representative Bryant renews her motion that House File 3106 be passed and moved to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
We will now move to House File 2781. Representative Obermueller. I'm going to move that again. Somebody else. Representative Nelson, would you please move that bill?
I'll move House File 2781 to be passed and moved to the General Register.
Thank you very much. Representative Obermueller, do you have any amendments to this bill?
Mr. Chair, I believe there are three there, and I've got another one here. We've been working hard with the department and with members on the proportions. This is an omnibus bill, and we've been working hard on pieces. I'm okay with the ones that I know of up there. I think it's A22 and 24 and maybe 23 as well. I'm not positive about which the three numbered are, but...
The first one that we've got is A24. Do you have that in front of you, Representative?
I do.
Okay. Do you want to explain that amendment, please?
Well, now I've apparently misplaced it.
And why don't we have Representative Nelson, if you would, move that amendment, please.
I'll move the A24 amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Apparently didn't have it. This one is super technical. We're actually moving the exact same language to different areas in the statute. This is... when we did it the last time where it says H there on line 1.3, we forgot that, and so you have to actually remove the old language and put the whole slot back in to put the H back in. So that's all that does. And then this 1.7 to 1.9 moves it from, we pegged it onto the end of the wrong sentence, and we're just moving it back up to the end of the sentence where it actually makes sense. So that's all
it.
This is.
Any possible questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendments, please say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, next amendment.
What is it?
820 amendment. Does everyone else have that?
I have an 820, 23, and a 22.
Yes, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, can I move the 820 amendment, please?
All right, we'll move the 820 amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, in previous bills that we've passed and have been signed by the governor already, these were the economic development and job portions of those that came from the taconite funds. And there was a technicality that was missed in it so that they're not able to distribute the monies. And it's on page 1.8 and 1.9, or lines 1.8, 1.9. that we have to allocate that. St. Louis County is where it's deposited, but they have to be have authority in this one to be able to do that. So this is a technical amendment to a previously passed bill. And there's also another change, and that's the effective date.
Okay, any questions on that amendment? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Solberg, your retroactive effective date, I don't understand why you would do retroactive and not the date that the, I think, the bill passed that had this language, or...
Representative Silver.
It looks like these, they're 2010 only, so why wouldn't you go back to the date that the bill passed that was missing this information?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, this is not my draft, but I think of what it is, it's trying to say that we need this in order because it passed before, and this is not new language, it's old language, so I think it has to go back and pick up a bill that's already been signed. So otherwise, it wouldn't write, and maybe council can help with me on that.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. and Representative Solberg, and you're correct. This is actually amending an effective date that is already in law, and so it is amending it to retroactive from the day that law was enacted, but it'll appear as an amendment to the law, Chapter 216.
And so if I may, just for clarification purposes, the net effect of this is that it becomes effective retroactively till the date after the governor signed the language into law originally.
Representative Solberg.
I think that's correct. That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions to the amendment? If not, all those in Representative Solberg renews his motion that A20 amendment be passed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Nelson, would you move the A22 amendment, please? Yes. You sure can. Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on what this does is on page 11, line 20, that part of the bill is concerned with the Science and Technology Authority, and there is it was the office of the state chief information officer came and asked to be put on that particular commission with the commissioner of Dolly, Deed, Ag, and all the others, because this is a science and technology authority. They felt that as the chief information officer that they would be able to add value to this particular working group. I'm fine with it. The Senate author, I'm sure, is fine with it, and I'd ask that you just accept it.
Any questions for Representative Mahoney on his amendment? No questions? Representative Mahoney, is a thumbs up. All right. All those in favor of the A22 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. All right. We'll do the A23 next.
I'll move the A23 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Moves the A23 amendment. As this yours, Representative Oliver Mueller? If so, would you please explain it?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's Representative Mahoney's as well, although I'm happy to explain it. But the long and the short of it is there is a fiscal note that deals with whether or not folks that are going to be on the new science and technology authority could get per diem and some payments and so forth. And what this amendment basically does is it makes that so it's not mandatory. We weren't going to fund it anyway, but now it's discretionary. If there's funds available, they can be paid. So that's the kind of the first half of it. And then the second half deals with just changing a definition from municipalities to governmental entities in the section that deals with whether or not we're going to put money into small community banks as opposed to one large bank, and just a definitional change there.
Okay. Any questions on it? Representative Holberg.
Representative Oldman-Mueller missed one thing. The page 1, line 14, the major and minor accounts. In the original bill, it just calls for the major accounts from Office of Management and Budget, or whatever they're calling it now. What we did is we asked them to do a study because there was seemed to be resistance to having the state put money into the I'm blanking on the name now. There's the community banks, and we've asked them, Minnesota Management and Budget, along with the Carlson School of Business and the community bankers, to come together and talk about how they could, the community banks could take more of the state's business and or get more of the state's business. And in the original bill, it only called for the major accounts. This amendment adds in the minor accounts, which are checking accounts, credit cards, smaller accounts, which are actually what the community banks are probably best able to handle.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Holberg, sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also on your amendment, you're deleting section 1 of the bill, and you didn't mention the reason for that, or...
Representative Holberg Miller.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you, Representative Holberg. I apologize for that. That's Representative, was a Representative Kalin provision that's already, my understanding, has already been signed into law, so it's unnecessary here.
Okay. Other questions? Other questions? All right. Then Representative Nelson renews his motion, that A23 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Last amendment I have is 825. Whose amendment is that? Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson moves the 825 amendment. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this deals with actually right to this, the heart of this committee on the financial side of things. This is compromise language. The bill currently provides that we will assign a new workforce, we will assign a workforce person to be in each workforce center to help with helping people start to finish through the process of when they're unemployed through getting a next job. That for the deed folks was a little unworkable because in some communities you need 10 of them at the front door, and some you don't need on every day except on maybe Tuesday afternoons or whatever. So what this language does essentially is say that the commissioner is going to implement a policy to have some face-to-face opportunities for unemployed workers to have help through the process for the ones that opt into it, not everybody has to have it, but if you want face-to-face help on the job search, on how to use the resources, that sort of thing, you get a chance to have some face-to-face work. The deed is thinks this is much more workable. They get a little more flexibility on where they put people and when they put them there, but it is going to be very important to make sure we have people, you know, kind of one-on-one in the workforce. We have had this pendulum swing to we're doing it all from call centers and not as much help in the workforce centers from where we used to be, which is we did it all in the workforce centers, and now we're trying to bring the balance back a little bit more.
Okay, questions? Does this make an impact on the fiscal note?
Well, Mr. Chair, it does only to a limited extent. The money that was in there is $3.3 million. That was actually money that, it was never new money anyway. We get a grant of, or we get money from the feds to the tune of about $47 million, and this was reallocating those dollars to make the workers go out and do a certain task that we're asking them to do. So they'll still be doing that new task, and so some money will still be reallocated. But it's much more flexible now in the sense that, you know, a Twin Cities workforce center may have three people helping with face-to-face work. Well, someone from in Worthington, it might only be Monday mornings where you really need that help.
All right. Any questions on the amendment? If not, Representative Nelson renews his motion to pass the or to add on the A25 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. I have no other amendments. Questions on the bill? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know this is a fiscal committee, but I think many of the amendments we just adopted were not fiscal in nature. My question is to the advisory commission that's being put together on page 15 of the bill. I don't see here whether or not they're subject to open meeting law, number one. And number two, you will, from at least my quick read of this, could also have the conflict of interest issue with the kind of people that you're putting on this commission and the things that they're making recommendations on. So if you would look at whether or not they're going to be subject to open meeting, number one, and number two, subject to disclosure of conflicts of interest. I think that would be, both items would be in the public interest.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg. I'm in agreement with there. What the goal of this bill, and it's Representative Mahoney's provision, but and so we can address it as well, but the goal here is to take something that's kind of a buried committee indeed and bring it out to where it can actually do the work it's supposed to do, which is kind of encourage this, you know, growth in this area. Certainly no intention to hide these things, and if there we need language, I think, to strengthen it, and Representative Mahoney is on board with it, I'd be more than happy to talk about strengthening the ability to have access to this. But the goal is, the people who are on it are the commissioners running the show, and of course they're going to be having these committees. They want the input from the public anyway. So,
Representative Polberg.
Mr. Chair, and I agree with what you're trying to accomplish. I'm just looking at the members of the advisory committee, and they may be serving more than one master in this process, and the public should be aware of that.
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the advisory commission, one of the reasons it's an advisory commission is so that they are one step removed from any money decisions. That is the reason that on page 11, the commissioners have the board. I'm trying to figure out the right word for it, whatever they called it. That's why they are there. They have to follow the disclosure laws. The advisory commission is not subject to as stringent, because one of the problems is you could not get people to go on that advisory board under our disclosure laws. The chief executive officer of Mayo, a venture capitalist. So the open meeting laws, I think I'll have to take a look at that. I'm not opposed to that at all. I just don't know if it's in here. We structured this on the same way as the public facilities authority is structured, as much as we could. So I suspect they're subject to open meeting laws, and I will check that before we get to the floor with it.
Follow-up question?
Mr. Chair, you referenced on page 11 an exemption from the disclosure on conflict of interest, or I missed the exact language here. I'm trying to speed read the whole page, and I can't find it.
Representative Mahoney.
I'm not sure I referenced what?
Well, Mr. Chair, in your explanation, Representative Mahoney, you seemed to say that you thought that these people should not fall under the conflict interest statute or whatever. So
Mr.
maybe
Chair.
You need to restate what you were trying to highlight on page 11, because maybe I missed the boat.
Representative Mahoney.
Yes. On the authority, on page 11, starting at line 23, those are all state commissioners or state employees. So they would come underneath the disclosure laws that we would typically ask of a department commissioner. You had spoken earlier to the advisory board. And the advisory board, when we ran by the people on that are listed there, venture capitalists, angel investors, chief executive officer or designee of Mayo Clinic, six chief executive officers or designees of science-oriented technology companies, no one would join. They said, I'm not going to put all of my financial information out there for the public to see. If they were to be on the authority board, that was the reason we created the advisory commission. Now, I don't know if I'm missing something here. I can certainly look into it. But staff said that was a easier way for those people to serve without having to put their whole financial world out in front of public. They are still subject to the ethics laws of the state, but as anyone would that offers their services to the state. But the reason for the advisory commission and that the way it's structured is to allow them to keep their financials as private as they feel they need to.
Representative Holbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, do you envision that this advisory commission would be subject to open meeting law?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, I don't see why it wouldn't be, but I don't know that it's in there specifically.
And Mr. Chair, I think maybe there might be a way to work this that we can protect. I mean, I don't think the public's looking for detailed financials, but employers, you know, some basic information to know who the members are and, you know, who they represent, I think would be important for the public to know that.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, I think that's just fine. But again, we have some of the most stringent disclosure laws in the country. And we ran that by a number of other authorities that are structured around the country. And they were rather shocked what we were asking people to disclose. So that's why we made the advisory commission.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
I will check into that, Representative Holbert.
Okay. Any other questions on the bill? If not, Representative Nelson renews his motion to pass House File 2781 and pass with the general register. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Which one? 2678?
Two junkie bills.
We'll next take House File 2678, Representative Junkie. Is he on this committee? Representative Bunn, would you please move House File 2678, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2678 be passed and moved to the general register.
Thank you very much, Representative Bunn. Representative Junkie, do you have any amendments?
I do, but I don't know if I have them. I know you should have two if you're staff is sharp, and I know they are. They probably have them, and they're in the folder and ready to go.
All right.
I don't have copies of them yet, and then I have one oral amendment I'm going to do, too.
Okay. We'll start with the 821 amendment. So, Representative Bunn, would you please move the 821 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the 821 amendment.
Thank you very much. Representative Junkie, would you please explain the amendment?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the 821 applies to dates certain for a section of the bill that came from the Secretary of State's office in discussions with Representative Kiffmeyer in the Finance Committee. It was agreed to come up with these dates and work on it between Ways and Means and Finance. So it's really just effective dates, technical changes.
Okay. Any questions to the amendment? Yeah, seeing none, Representative Bunn renews her motion that Amendment 821 be added. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. 822 amendment, and would you, again, Representative Bunn, move the 822 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the 822 amendment.
Thank you very much. Representative Junkie, would you please explain the 822?
Mr. Chair and others, this is also an effective date on the industrial hemp section of the bill. Again, to make sure everyone's aware that there's no work, no money, nothing needs to be done until and if the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency approves that as a crop in the United States. So it takes away any question that there'd be a fiscal note on that section of the bill.
Okay. Questions on the A22 amendment? If not, seeing none, Representative Bunn renews her motion. The 822 amendment be added. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Now, your oral amendment, Mr. Representative Junkie.
Yeah, and I don't know if I have the pages give me a current engrossment. I couldn't get that off. Maybe it just was available recently. But I think this matches. I don't have the bill in front of me. Page 51, line 1. Do you have a page 51? That'll be the first question. All right. Because I don't on the one I have. All right. Page 51, line 1, after the 2, insert 5, comma. So we're adding one more section, if you will, to that effective date. All these are technical changes on effective dates, and this one pertains to the teachers' license, or teachers' veterans' preference sections. And we neglected one of the effective date sections at the end there. So.
Okay. Any questions on that amendment? All right. No questions. All those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All right. Opposed, same sign. All right. Any other amendments? If not, Representative Junkie, please explain your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, what this is the Omnibus Agriculture and Veterans Affairs policy bill. I don't need to go through all sections unless you want to. There's 23 different sections addressing 23 different items, mainly bills from members and or department bills, covering a broad range of issues in both agriculture and veterans affairs. For example, in agriculture, we talk about everything from wolf damage compensation to how counties can charge for 4-H programs to Secretary of State lien or reporting Social Security number law to lien law to corporate farm law. There's a vast amount and variety, and sometimes even cross-jurisdictional language in here. In the veterans, again, there's a lot of items, everything from state flag folding procedures to veterans preference for teachers to county veteran service officer rewrite recodification to veterans cemetery language and on and on. So there's a number of things, I think, again, for this committee's duties and oversight. There is now a positive fiscal note on this bill after being through all the finance committees. I think all finance issues have been addressed, and there's actually a small positive account balance at the end of the day.
Very good. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
In the fiscal note, we see there's an actual cost to the state of $144,000. Mr. Chair.
We have the preliminary.
It's a preliminary one, and there's no changes in that yet.
Mr. Chair, that might have been for the hemp section, and we took care of that in our effective date.
No, Mr. Chairman, not quite, and that's why we're trying to get one additional amendment. I think that needs to be done so we make sure we address that. So if we can just have a little bit of a little bit of time to discuss it to make sure we address it correctly.
All right.
I don't want this out of here without it being addressed in a proper way. So the fiscal staff is working on it.
Yeah, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Chair Junkie, regarding the bills we heard, the Welty bill and the Davids bill regarding cemeteries for veterans, I'm looking at page 50, and I don't really see where that's addressed. I see the Port Ridgely State Park. Am I missing something there, Mr. Chairman and Chair Junkie?
What, Representative Davids, are you talking about the cemetery section I was listing here, the one in your area?
Yeah, we had, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman, we had the Welty bill and the Davids bill. One was specific to Sylmar County, one was southeast Minnesota, and I don't see.
Yes, it's there on page
Representative 50, Junkie.
50.8.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I always want to take care of my friends in southeast Minnesota.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Junkie, on page 17 of the bill, you're limiting liability, and generally those kinds of things go to the Civil Justice Committee. Did this section of this bill in some way, shape, or form go through that committee, and can you explain to me what liability we're granting for what purposes?
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, this is a similar language that you see to the E10 that's currently in statute. This was requested by Bob Krogman and his group that we carry this forward for the potential E15 waiver that's coming from the federal government, perhaps this summer after we're adjourned. In layman's terms, what it does is it holds their retailers harmless if someone dispenses the wrong fuel into their vehicle or motor. And so it's almost identical to what we have done in the past for E10. Again, just to hold his, they're not responsible for the fuel. They're responsible, you know, for other things, but not the grade of the fuel. If someone goofs up, they're not responsible because you put the wrong fuel in the wrong, if you put diesel fuel into an unleaded tank.
Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, what happens to the consumer that is forced to use, say, an E15 and it does damage to their engine? Is there still a liability that they can recover if that occurs?
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, on any fuel, it would be tracked back to the source of the fuel, whether it be a pipeline company that transports it or a terminal that dispenses it or as far back in the chain where there would have been a problem to the fuel, but it's not the retailer. The fuel is certified by the federal government, EPA, as an acceptable fuel, just like that's what happened with E10. In every state in the nation right now, E10 is available and able to be used and can be used really for any engine. There's some exceptions on antique vehicles or old lawn and garden, but there are pumps where you can get non-E10 for those. You know that as an owner. That fuel is certified as good for every engine in this United States, and the same thing is going on with E15 today. EPA has taken the testimony and it will decide, we believe, this summer on an E15 waiver, which then would allow every engine, if they deem to be used with E15. There is some talk, I will tell you, of a labeling requirement on that waiver. The language you see before you does not allow Minnesota to go with a full E15 requirement unless it's a full waiver. If it's a partial waiver, that is, cars, say, from 2001 and newer can utilize this material, and if the EPA says older than that can only go up to E10, then what you would see is a retailer would either have to have a separate pump for those two if they want to dispense E15 or put in a blender pump where you choose the grade and it blends it within the pump, which Representative Westrom knows about. He's got a manufacturer out in his area that does that. And so this, what you see before you as language, Minnesota only goes to an E15 if it is a full waiver for all engines from the EPA. Otherwise, there'll be labeling requirements, and retailers one-on-one will decide what to do at that point.
And
Representative Polk.
Mr. Chair, just to get back to the consumer, if it's a partial waiver, the consumers will not be forced to buy the E15. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, unless it's a full waiver, then the pumps will be labeled. Similarly, if you're familiar with diesel now, the diesel pumps are labeled with low sulfur or the dyed fuels or whatever. So you would have to make the choice of which pump. But, yes, you're absolutely correct. If it's not a full 100% waiver, then it'll be station by station what they have available, and you can choose as a consumer what to put in.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Davids.
I'll pass, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Other questions on the bill? Representative Solberg.
I would like to offer the A20 amendment.
Representative Solberg moves the A20 amendment.
And this makes it very clear from the fiscal staff that cost
that's
is not
fine.
Associated with it.
So. I've seen the amendment.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. To the bill as amended, any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Bunn renews her motion to pass House File 2678, move it to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Where's my bill?
Thank you, Representative Junkie. I believe we have another one of your bills. Senate file 2844. Is that right? Representative Brood, would you please move House Senate file 2844?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I move that.
Thank you very much. Any amendments to this one, Representative Junkie?
No.
No amendments. All right, then please present your bill.
Members, this bill's been through about 35 committees, I think. And for a two-page bill, it's amazing to me. But that's my editorial comment. This is the result of actually 2 years of work on how we will license and inspect man lifts and small elevators like that you would see in churches. There was a new set of elevator inspection guidelines put out by Department of Labor and Industry. At the time, we realized that man lifts, which are typically found in grain elevators and rarely used small little elevator type units, as well as some of our small, particularly in rural Minnesota, church elevators and things that probably don't need the scrutiny of elevators here in the state office building that are used intensively and daily. So this, what you see here, is a result of that working group, the fees they will pay, and how often they need to be inspected. Everybody that I'm aware of through the 35 committees has agreed to this, and there's been no opposition.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Any questions? Representative Carlson.
Representative Junkie mentions the 35 committees. I've been there and done that, I think. But I was looking, and maybe this is a staff question that drew to my attention that, I see, because it's a Senate file. It's before us. I was going to say it doesn't list the, I didn't notice the, okay. I answered my own question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Representative Westrum.
So, Representative Junkie, just can you, what is there, what's the cost involved in these, and how is it going to affect the small operators, the churches, and the, and you said man lifts, a lot of construction sites use man lifts. It's the same kind of ones you're talking about?
Representative Junkie.
There is no operating fees involved at all except for the original permit fee that's when you register that you have a man lift or a small elevator. So there's no subsequent operating fee permits. And then they are subject to inspection not more than once every 3 years. And that's it.
Okay. Mr. Representative Chair, Westrum.
Representative Junkie, who pays for that inspection every three, not more than, or not more than every 3 years? Is that
Representative Junkie.
That'll be paid for by the owners of the elevator, and they're fine with that. These are minor inspections, you know.
And what's the cost on them again?
I don't know. Is Dolly in here? They followed me to the other 35, but apparently they. It's $100.
$100.
Yeah. Okay. So every 3 years, your church or your elevator will have to pay a $100 fee for the inspection.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what's happening right now? They're not being inspected. They're just installed by the company and.
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, that's correct. And then as of last year, they put in regular annual inspections and rather large fees for large buildings like this to get inspected, which is fine. We understand that. But these folks, because technically they're defined as elevators, whether it's a small elevator going up an arm railing in a church, that's an elevator moving you from floor to floor, or whether you're a small hand-powered man lift or a belt-powered man lift. There's some rather extensive man lifts too, but they got thrown into that category also. So right now there was zero inspections. Everyone that's worked on these, the Elevator Association and Representative Hamilton's worked on this on the church issue. Everyone's agreed that this is reasonable, and that even in the elevators or the churches, we want to make sure things are working. But once every 3 years seemed enough. It's $33 a year, I guess, if you average it out.
So, Mr. Chair, one last question.
Representative Westrum.
Your comments made me think of, I know around some of our lakes areas in Alexandria, where there's bluffs, there's individuals that put elevators in to get up and down to the lake. Is that considered, I think they call them incline elevators, or they're actually out in the open, but they run on a track. Is that same thing?
Representative Junkie.
And again, since mine only addresses man lifts and churches, I'm not sure, because I was, thankfully, was not involved with the larger elevator issue. So I don't know where that is, but you can check with department.
Would there be anybody that does know that?
Commissioner Spriggum will be able to answer that for you within seconds.
Okay, nobody here. If there is somebody that could talk to me afterwards, I'd appreciate it.
Those are not covered, apparently. They're not covered. They're private, single-use, I imagine, so they're probably not involved, according to the person in the audience.
Okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just suggest maybe amend the Rood motion. As a freshman, do they still have the consent calendar?
We don't put anything on
it. What? Oh, we don't have that anymore?
No.
Not for elevator bills.
Well, I was just thinking for the fine work Chair Junkie has done on this bill, maybe we should give him a break and send it to the consent calendar. Can't do that? Freshman mistake. We don't have that anymore? That was kind of fun.
I think we have it. We just never send anything there, right?
I'll find out from the chief clerk.
You check on that for us.
I'll check on that and report back to the committee.
All right. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, Representative Rood renews her motion that Senate File 2844 be passed and sent to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Our last bill is House File 2037. Representative Solberg, would you like to move
Chair,
your...
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2037, be recommended passed and placed on the General Registry. And, Mr. Chair, I want you to understand that, as Chair, I accommodated myself and put me at the end. I made you stick around for it anyway.
Well, thank you, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, there is also an amendment, A1 amendment. I'd like to move that A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Solberg moves the A1 amendment. Would you please describe the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, let me describe that along with the bill itself. The last couple of years we've been working on, with the fiscal staff, taking things that are special revenue accounts within the general fund and getting them out of the general fund and putting them in the special revenue fund. And the authority within MMB to do that, what they were authorized to do, they did. There were several of them that they were not authorized to do, and we're accommodating that. The accounting will still take place. The appropriations will still take place. It'll just not say a special revenue fund within the general fund. And the amendment is one that came up in a recently passed bill that we didn't catch. So that's, I think, with the guardian ad litems. And so we're taking it out of the general fund and putting it in the special revenue account. That's, in effect, the bill that gives the authority to MMB to make those transfers and do the accounting.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? No questions on the amendment. All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion adopted. To the bill, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Solberg. By doing this, does it have any adverse effect on, like, cash flow or the balance of flow or the balance of the general fund on allotment, et cetera? Or is because forecasting, even though the money was sent to the general fund, it was reserved for the special fund purpose, there's no effect? I mean, I'm just wondering, is this going to have a adverse effect for when an allotment could occur under current statute, or how bond houses would look at our cash flow or balance sheet?
Representative Solberg.
Well, let me try to answer it, and fiscal staff can correct me if I answer it incorrectly. I think it does not have any effect on cash flow. Two things, because it still is part of the statutory general fund, the special revenue funds. The governor can, and the MMB can take the money from the special revenue funds and put it in the general fund for their short-term borrowing to meet their cash flow needs. The fact is they've done a lot of that already. And so it doesn't, this will not have an effect on it. I think even if it's said within the general fund and we're putting in the special revenue fund, it's for a specific purpose. And so it would still give them the flexibility to transfer it back on a short-term basis. The additional question that you had as far as unallotment, I will probably have to ask the chief financial person to help me on it. I don't think it does, but I'm not sure.
Okay, let's ask that. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure of the technical definition of it. These are all treated as dedicated accounts within the general fund. So the unallotment law talks about general unallotment at the fund level. So I suppose it's conceivable that one of these could be unallotted, but because there's dedicated revenue for it, I don't think it's ever been considered to do that. And then the other thing would be most of these are relatively small. We're now at the point where we're talking about probably less than $5 million in any of these, or in the sum of these accounts that are being moved around here.
Well, and that was
Representative Holberg.
Thank you. That was going to be my next question, but I guess where I was going with this is that my understanding of the unallotment authority, of course, it's under litigation, so we could all be wrong here, but it's when the fund falls below a certain level or projection that the authority to unallot kicks in, and if we are pulling all this money, albeit small, in the big picture, does that kick in the governor's unallotment authority earlier because we've now moved this money out of the general fund to special funds?
Mr. Chair, members, and I think it may be even a more technical issue than that, and that's whether in the allotment structure or the accounting system, whether these are treated as separate funds or not. And there are the unrestricted general fund, the sales tax, income tax, and so on, revenue clearly is not and is part of the unallotment issue. These are, while they are accounts or dedicated accounts within the general fund, I'm not sure how they're handled in the allotment structure, and I'll check on it.
But okay. my
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, my first sense is that they would not be a subject, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think it makes any difference if they're in the general fund or not general fund. If they're in the special revenue fund, I think they would stand the same because it's a dedicated account within the general fund, the current status, instead of a dedicated account in the special revenue fund. So I just don't know, but I don't think it would have much difference.
Representative Holberg?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just look for further clarification and any unintended consequence of this.
Okay. All right. Representative Kahn.
Well,
please use your mic.
No, I'm not sure exactly what the effect of this bill is, but some, probably a little bit over 20 years ago when I was chairing State Government Finance Committee, we did a major project of getting rid of dedicated funds and putting them, everyone that we could, into the general fund. It was very difficult because one of the things is we had to have that taken off. We had to make sure that that wasn't considered in the budget balancing effect. It was a unanimous work of the committee, and we had complete support of the majority leadership and the minority leadership. And the final, well, by the time it got through the process, I think we had lost a certain amount of them, were ferociously returned as special accounts. We did apply to the, I think it's CSG, which has the special recognition of government projects, and we got an honorable mention for that. And it's kind of nice. I don't know if it's nice, whatever, but over the years, every time I see one of these, I figure that's probably, again, we've probably gotten rid of the whole thing by now. But it was a major effort some 20 years ago to say that the best way of doing government accounting was to put everything in the government in the general fund and keep account of it, but not have them. But these special revenue accounts took money away from public scrutiny and anything else. So,
but Mr.
Chair, we've probably gotten rid of all of them.
Representative Chair,
and one of the things that the goal is to make sure that they're not automatically appropriated. that these are still come before the legislature to be appropriated. So we still have the accounting. That's the most important thing.
All right. Any other questions? If not, Representative Solberg renews his motion that House File 2037 be passed and go to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
When is the next meeting? Do we have the next meeting scheduled, Representative Solberg? It is not scheduled yet, so there will be another. Okay. Oh, good. We can hardly wait. All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, is that another one this week?
No.
Okay.
No more this week. All right.
Thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.